And you're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. This is Nathan Ruggles joining here with you today in the seat. Thanks so much for being with us here. Also like to thank the United Mine Workers as well as UFCW. Those are just two of the unions that sponsor us. They support us. They keep us going here at the Union Edge. Also, as a quick reminder, you can not only catch us at a radio station near you, and you can always check on our website at theunionedge.com to find one near you. You can also listen live online and on our app. Download the app. Download for your iPhone, for your Android phone. Either way, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. So we now have the pleasure of having with us, with the latest news out of West Virginia, with the West Virginia AFL-CIO, Josh Soar. Josh, thanks for being with us here today on the Union Edge.
Hey. Hey, Nathan, thanks for having me.
So I know you guys got some great, some interesting news coming out of there, efforts out of West Virginia. But first off, I know we want to talk about the big anniversary of the 60th anniversary here with the FL.
Yeah, we celebrated our 60th anniversary just last month. We had our constitutional convention. We had a great convention. The enthusiasm is up, even though we've been attacked by our state legislature since the Republicans took over a few years ago. The energy is alive and well. I think our folks are ready to fight and looking forward to the next 60 years. I mean, we clearly have our challenges, but one thing that I think will pay off for all of us in the end, as long as we keep advocating for workers and their families, there will always be tremendous support and a great need for labor organizations, not only in West Virginia, but throughout the country.
Well, absolutely. And you know, it's important to take that time when those important dates to come up to look at, you know, where you've been over the decades, where you are and where you want to go, right?
Well, that's funny you say that, because we were looking through some of the transcripts of some of the early conventions right after the AFL and CIO merged again. And, you know, a lot of the issues that they were talking about on the floor of the convention are issues that we're talking about today. I mean, they may be, you know, slight variations, but, you know, we're fighting for, you know, fair wages and good benefits and a safe workplace, all the things that we're fighting for today. So we may be talking about it in a slightly different way, but the issues, the fundamental issues are still the same. We've got to keep fighting for working families. That's what we're all about.
And is that good or bad? I mean, is it good in the sense that, you know, we're still fighting those important battles and you guys are right there advocating for those important issues? Or is it also at the same time that why are we still fighting some of these battles? I mean, what's your perspective on that?
Well, that's a good question. And, you could look at it from either angle. The reality is that we're always going to have to do this. Sure, there are some good employers out there who want to do the best that they can to treat their employees fairly and provide, you know, good benefits for their workers and their families. But there are far too many that care more about the bottom line and what happens on Wall Street than what happens in little white houses on Main Street. And that requires us to always be on top of our game, active and engaged on what our members are thinking and fighting for their rights. At all three levels, at the federal, state, and local levels of government, because a lot of the decisions that are made at those three levels have can have pretty dramatic impacts on our lives.
Well, it certainly do. And you know, you mentioned bottom line, and, you know, part of that is educating some of these companies, right, that it is actually in their interests to make sure you've got workers that are well-trained and dedicated and well-compensated. And you mentioned levels, too, in terms of, let's look at the state level there. You know, we've heard about infrastructure being an important national issue, but you've had some news there from last month in terms of working towards infrastructure there in West Virginia, correct?
Yeah, we did. We actually had a special election on October 7th, and on the ballot was the approval or not of a road bond, which will ultimately, allow for a couple billion dollars to be invested into our roads and roadways and bridges throughout West Virginia. And that thing passed by a 3-to-1 margin. I mean, it shocked literally everybody.
Excellent.
But it was a great day. We're talking about potentially tens of thousands of newly created jobs as a result of this. On top of that, we, you know, our roads are in deplorable, in some cases, deplorable conditions. And now we have an opportunity to fix our roads and get some of our folks back to work. So we viewed it as a win-win. The only thing that we've got to do now is we've got to stay on top of this and make sure that, you know, these jobs go to local workers. But we believe that we have some solid statute in code right now that will provide for us to get these jobs, provided they're trained and drug-free, which we're the best at. But a real opportunity for us to jumpstart our economy in West Virginia. We're looking, we're pleased and looking forward to the opportunity to do this.
Well, that's excellent. And you mentioned roads and bridges as well. And I've driven down through the beautiful country that is West Virginia, and certainly a lot of both, and getting those bridges taking you through the hills there and the mountains of West Virginia. Now, you had mentioned, though, that, you know, the devil is in the details, right, in terms of making sure that, you know, these grand plans actually mean not just jobs, but good jobs, right? And jobs that are secure and jobs with benefits, and that it's going to benefit the folks right there in West Virginia, not going to somebody from who knows where, right?
Well, that's right, Nathan. And we've had, unfortunately, some examples in which we've had public construction projects in which we, you know, are awarded to companies who sub them out to, you know, different companies who bring in imported workers. And look, I get that everybody, you know, should have an opportunity, but what we ought to do is take care of our own first. I mean, we have a struggling or a lagging economy here. We have, with our decline in the coal markets, and, you know, we've lost over decades jobs to, you know, companies overseas because they can pay pennies to the dollar of what they pay workers in the States. But we need to jumpstart our economy, and we've got a great opportunity to do that. We've got a great workforce in West Virginia. They just need an opportunity, and we hope that as a result of the passage of this bond in early October, a lot of these workers will get that opportunity.
Well, that's excellent. And, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to expect that if the taxpayers of West Virginia are going to foot the bill for new projects, that money goes in the pockets of their fellow West Virginians and actually put some good jobs on the table there. Before we hit to the break here, what I know you guys, obviously it's going to take some work to hold your politicians accountable and keep an eye on them to make sure that they move forward the right way with this. How are you guys, the burden does fall on unions a lot, right, to help make sure that happens.
Well, we're really the only structure that exists that can provide advocacy for working families. I mean, and, you know, that's the real value, in my opinion, of labor organizations. Because if the other side, the Koch brothers and the like, are successful of eliminating labor organizations, removing the voice of workers in the workplace, then there's nothing standing in the way of the corporate CEOs from really putting a hammer down. And this is what blows my mind, Nathan. I mean, all of these corporate CEOs, for the most part, thrive when there's a thriving middle-class economy.
That's right.
Well, labor organizations are the backbone of the middle class. Seems to me that they would want to do more to lift up the middle-class families versus suppress them and keep taking away and attacking labor organizations, which is the backbone of the middle class, as I said. So it really flies in the face, in my mind, of what this is all about. But those bad actors are still out there, and we're going to keep fighting them.
Well, that's great to hear, and you're absolutely right. It has been the backbone historically, and we need to make sure that continues and grows, because unfortunately, like you said, they aren't understanding that if they want people to buy their products, those people need to have good jobs. So it's at least in their self-interest. If not, of course, it is the moral, ethical, and just thing to do to make sure that folks have good jobs, and unions have been standing up for that for time, and it's wonderful to hear how you guys are continuing that good fight there. So I know we have other issues we need to get to, including a lawsuit that's been going on down there in West Virginia we should talk about. We do need to take a break first. So we're here talking on the line with Josh Sword of the West Virginia AFL-CIO. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
People in Oregon and across the nation are staging a walkout today to send a message to members of Congress that it's time to pass a Clean Dream Act. With only a month left in the 2017 session, advocates for immigrants' rights hope to spur the House and Senate to pass a bill protecting recipients of deferred action for childhood arrivals from deportation. More than 12,000 Oregonians received DACA protections, allowing them to go to school and work, including Leo Reyes, co-founder of the Oregon DACA Coalition. He says it's helped him live a life without constant fear of deportation.
So there's a huge component for me relating to self-esteem and being able to acknowledge that my status does not in any way diminish my humanity.
Oregon would lose almost $630 million in GDP annually without DACA workers, according to research by the University of Southern California and the Center for American Progress. In Salem, the walkout is scheduled for 1:30, followed by a rally at the state capitol at 3. DACA protects about 800,000 people nationwide. Reyes says it's important that the DREAM Act stay clean. That is legislation that doesn't increase funding for immigration enforcement, attack sanctuary cities, or hurt undocumented people not eligible for DACA in any other way. He says he doesn't want to see DACA recipients used as a bargaining chip.
I really see this as being an opportunity for us to build up our community and build up these individuals to be able to move forward in their lives and really continue with that pursuit of a dignified quality of life. But that cannot come at the expense of their families.
President Donald Trump ended the DACA program more than 2 months ago. He says it is now up to Congress to come up with a solution. Otherwise, protections will completely expire in March. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Allison is perfect. I mean, she'd never tell you that. She's humble and perfect. She likes everyone. She even likes her untidy roommate's weird guinea pig. Allison, wait, are you texting and driving? Allison, no. That's the exact opposite of what I was just saying about you. Why, Allison, why? Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back here with Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Nathan Ruggles here with you. Thanks so much for joining us here this afternoon. I'd like to send some thanks out to AFGE as well as the PSEA for their support for this program. And we're going to continue the conversation here with Josh Sword of the West Virginia AFL-CIO. Josh, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nathan.
So before the break, we were talking about recently passed there the road bond issue there in West Virginia to support infrastructure spending. But I know that's not the only news you guys have in recent weeks. You have an ongoing lawsuit down there as well, correct?
Yeah, when the Republican, and I say that loosely because, look, not all Republican politicians are out to get labor organizations, but in the case of West Virginia, when the Republicans took over the state legislature after the 2014 election, the first thing they wanted to do was go after labor organizations. So they started laying the foundation to pass a bill commonly referred to as Right to Work. And they didn't get a chance to do it in 2015, but one of the first things they did in 2016 legislative session was pass it. And they passed a really flawed bill. And they essentially, because they really didn't know what they were doing, they copy and pasted it from another state. I believe it was from Indiana, and they didn't change all the language to make it applicable to West Virginia.
Okay.
So anyway, after they passed it, you know, we filed a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of it, specific to the illegal taking of property from local unions and, you know, folks that continue to pay union dues. And we challenged a number of the other issues and flaws that were in the bill. That is actually still in court. We've been in court. We filed the lawsuit in April of last year, and we're still waiting on this issue to be resolved.
So April 2017, or was 2016?
April of 2016. So year and a half we've been in court over this, and there are a lot of different things that have happened, and it's too far down in the weeds to go into. But the short of it is, you know, the judge granted an injunction, which we asked for in our initial filing of the suit, and it was granted. And the Supreme Court here recently overturned that injunction just a few weeks ago. So technically, we are now officially a right-to-work state. However, the judge has not yet ruled on the merits of the legislation. We expect her to rule any time now. And, you know, the worst-kept secret is that, you know, regardless of how she rules, this issue will be before our state Supreme Court on the merits of the bill, not the injunction. So, okay. You know, we're hanging in there. I think that we have a really solid argument based on the way our state's constitution is written, that this is a legal taking of property from local unions. It's something that we feel pretty strongly in. It's unfortunate that we have to go to court to try to, you know, protect our organizations from folks taking advantages of our services without paying any dues or fees.
That's right.
But when you're in a legislative environment in which the leaders of that legislative environment want to remove the voice of workers in the workplace so that the fat cats can get fatter, this is the kind of stuff you got to deal with.
Well, and it is unfortunate. I want to say, too, that when we talk about this here on this program, as far as I'm concerned, at a minimum, we should be saying, you know, so-called right to work, because too many people don't understand what that means. And a better way to call it is really a Freeloader Protection Act of some kind, because what it means is basic. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Right? A Free Rider Protection Act. It's what it comes down to. It's like saying that somebody can have their Netflix subscription but not pay any money for it, but they still get the benefits of it. And that's what it comes down to, which is absolutely nonsense and nonsensical for anyone who takes 5 minutes to think about it. That is, if you want to be fair and make sense. But if your mission, as you were describing it there, is to hurt unions and hurt working families, then that's the only way that so-called right to work makes sense. And it's unfortunate that you, as so many states, are engaged in this across the country. But it is good to hear that you guys are fighting back. And, you know, whether it's in the courts or the court of public opinion, in this case, you got this lawsuit. And of course, we wish you the best of luck moving forward with that. And we'll hope you prevail there in terms of what the West Virginia Constitution says.
Well, we appreciate that, Nathan. And the funny thing is, we've polled this issue a couple times. And when you just, you know, hit on the surface and you talk about right to work, you know, people think that sounds good. You know, everybody should have a right to work, that kind of stuff. But when you explain to them what it is, the overwhelming majority of West Virginians are opposed to it.
Well, of course.
But the other side is very good about, you know, staying on message and trying to, you know, confuse people as to what a piece of legislation might actually do. In fact, they didn't even call it, the other side didn't even call it the right to work bill in West Virginia. They called it the Workplace Freedom Act. So, you know, there they are playing games with the name of something that people are universally opposed to, but they're pretty smart about how they handle that, because, you know, they know people generally aren't going to take the time to really understand what the issue is all about.
Well, and you and I both know, and we all should know, that the only thing, you know, as they say, freedom, the only thing free about it is it's a free service that you don't pay for. It's allowing somebody to get something for nothing, for free. And that's the only freedom involved. It's freedom from paying anything. When you owe something for a service, which is the way the world works, right? But obviously not in the minds of those who want to destroy unions, which, as you were saying earlier, have been the backbone of working families in the middle class for so long in this country. So we'll keep fighting the good fight with that one. And I know before we go, I know we should take some time to kind of reflect on what's going on down there in West Virginia. You guys have this relatively new legislature that's putting these things forward, but the future may not be bleak with this recent election we've had.
Well, you know, that's right. We were watching with great anticipation what happened in Virginia on Tuesday night. Obviously, we're closely located to each other geographically, and I'll tell you, the results over there are encouraging, and we're going to be looking closer to, you know, some of the exit polling, some of the results as we try to prepare for the 2018 election over here, in which, you know, half of the Senate and every single one of our representatives in the House of Delegates will be up on the ballot. We can keep this momentum going. We'll have a real opportunity to make some changes and start undoing some of the attacks and the negative things that have happened to working families since the 2014 election.
And, you know, obviously it's not all about elections. It's all about the work that takes place between elections, right? But they are very significant. And in terms of that legislature of yours that had the big change there in 2014, and you've seen too many of these Republican legislatures fighting against working families, what are your hopes for changing those things up after 2018?
Well, that's exactly what it is, and I believe if we can get back to talking about the economic issues, then we'll be just fine. What has happened in far too many places is there's been a focus on the polarizing issues that aren't related to the economic kitchen table type issues. We've got to get back to focusing on making sure that workers can go out and make a decent wage, provide for their families, can safely assume that they'll be coming home later that evening because it's a safe work environment. Once we get to talking about those issues and voters are focusing on those issues, then we're going to be just fine.
Well, and we know that the 99%, no matter who you are or where you come from, but if you're in the 99%, those are the issues that people generally care about most if you're out there talking to people.
That's exactly right. But once again, the other side is very good about, you know, playing on emotions and polarizing
and fears,
issues,
right?
Not related to anything that's important as it relates to economic stuff.
So, it's great to know that you guys are in this struggle, moving forward day to day down there, obviously, with these issues, as well as looking forward to the next big election, that these concerns of working families are right there on your agenda.
Well, we're going to keep fighting. That's what we're here for. And hopefully greener pastures await us.
All right. Well, that'll have to wrap it up. Be the last word there. We thank you so much, Josh, for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Nathan. Much appreciated.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And that's Josh Sword of the West Virginia AFL-CIO here with us today. This is Nathan Ruggles with you on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.